pleasure to have you today celebrating with us Philippine Independence Day. So what inspired you to actually come here and celebrate Philippine Independence Day?
I think whether you are Filipino or Japanese or Spanish or Mexican, when it comes to Independence Day celebration, there is something that triggers the heart, I guess, you know, that makes you want to become a part of it. And it just so happened that I was here. I'm here in the United States. So I had a performance in Carson in California for the very same event, you know, Independence Day. And then about a few weeks ago, my wife said, "Gary, Houston, TFC celebrating 30 years, but they kind of want to celebrate it with you and in time, in line with the Independence Day." And I said, "You know, I'm already here. Why not?" You know, so I said, "Okay, come to Houston." And Houston, I mean, who doesn't want to perform here? I've always enjoyed being here. I have very good friends here. My pulmonologist is actually from here, and he's played a major role in the life of my wife and I and my family. So I had dinner with him last night. I got to meet some people here in Houston, and I think it was the right decision to become a part of this, especially for the event of it being the 126th Philippine Independence Day.
Yes, it surely is a milestone, right? So what kind of preparations did you do performing here? I know you probably don't need much, but did you prepare special something for just for this event?
Okay, I don't try and prepare more or less for events. I prepare the same way, you know, and I think the biggest preparation I have is it's all here and it's all here. Even if I do the same songs again and again, it's never the same audience and it's never the same event. So if I do a song that has, let's say, one of my teleserie theme songs, it's a different audience, it's a different event, and I never know what's going to happen. So I can prepare as much as I want, but you know, if things don't turn out that way, then I prepare really for nothing. But what I do is I keep my mind and my heart in touch with what I am called to do. And then that's what I do when I'm on stage. I just give people my all. In fact, I ask, do we have a time limit? Because most places have a time limit.
Yes.
You're not supposed to go over that. But they said here, there's really none. So we don't know how long the show is going to be. And I'm excited.
Yeah, we're truly excited too. And how do you think music can bridge the gap, you know, cultural gaps or bring people together? Because music is universal,
right?
It's like you connect with your audience, your fans.
I think music is perhaps it's a gift that several of us have been given, that actually has, music itself is perhaps the strongest medium that there is available in putting a message across. It's the only time that I can sit down with someone and say, "Listen to me," for 3.5 minutes over a song, and that person will not react until after, as compared to conversing with someone and in the middle of the conversation, no, I don't agree with that. But when it's a song, you really capture the audience, and we're not doing just one song of 3 or 4 minutes, we're doing several songs tonight. So I think we're gonna be able to capture people, and we're going to break down the barriers, because I mean, Philippines alone, how many dialects do we have, right? It's not just Tagalog, and I mean, there's Bisaya, there's Ilonggo, there's so many things. And I think that somehow music, especially in the Philippines, has played a major role in uniting people, in making people sense the importance of certain things they may be going through, relationships and all. I think Filipinos are well inclined to receiving messages given in the form of music.
That's right, and actually you empower. Because I know I love your song, Natutulog Ba Ang Diyos. Oh my God, that's my favorite.
Well, so, when I come back, I mean, this is really a, how would I say it, an offshoot from the shows that I usually do. But tonight I'm going to ask the people here, I said, if I came back with a band, and I mean with the whole live show, you know, if they want to see that, you know, then I don't mind coming back, because we might be going on tour in October and November, and if Houston is open to it, I'll let my sister and my management know right away. Let's do Houston.
Wow, that's awesome. That's something we look forward to. Lastly, what advice can you give to those who are aspiring to be an artist and who look up to you as a role model.
Okay.
Like me. No, I'm just kidding. I'm too late for that. But anyway.
No, listen. When I first came out into the industry, I never had the desire of reaching this point. And I never thought I'd get to this point. It was my wife who once told me while we were walking in a shopping mall, she goes, you know, one day you won't be able to walk this mall anymore. And I looked at her and I said, really now? It wasn't, oh, really? Wow, you know. And she was also the first one who said, one day the stage that you stand on won't be a stage that's in the Philippines. It will be somewhere else. And I could not believe that. And why I'm sharing this is because do not aspire to be me. Just aspire to be the best that you can be. If you've been given the gift of music, not everybody has that. Many people hope to have it, but not many people have it. So if you do have it, don't aspire to be like a Taylor Swift or to be like, you know, whoever your favorite artist is. That's already their spot. That's already their place. You be the best that you can be, and you probably will create an impact in such very personal and deep ways that you never thought possible. To people you never even knew before, they'll just come up to you or you'll receive a message, a direct message on Instagram or wherever, and they'll tell you, hey, you know, thank you so much. You don't know me. I heard this song that you came up with. It's beautiful. I hope you can write more music that way. Now, that's just one person. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how many you might have reached that you just don't know about? So just aspire to be the best that you can be. If you're blessed with the gift of music, then maximize that blessing by being the best that you're meant to be with the talent that you've been given.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Gary.
Oh,
and look forward to your performance. Yes.
Oh, I hope you enjoy it.
Lawin Media Network.
Bringing to you the most relevant content across all platforms.
Business, legal, politics, health, lifestyle, and entertainment.
Your source for all the news and updates in the greater Houston community from Texas and all over the world.
Get informed and empowered with Lawin Media Network.
The following program is produced by Lawin Media Network. The views and opinions expressed in this program are solely those of the individuals appearing on the show and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Lawin Media Network, its affiliates, sponsors, or partners. The content provided in this program is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Lawin Media Network does not guarantee the accuracy, completeness, or timeliness of the information.
Alright, good evening! Good evening, everyone! And magandang umaga po sa inyong lahat there in the Philippines. Welcome to our episode 4 of Be Bold, Why Not? With MJ tonight. And of course, our show is brought to you by Lawin Media Network. And you are watching us live on Facebook, YouTube, stream.lawin.live, and twitch.tv.
And if you miss our live show, you can listen to our podcasts on Amazon Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. There's a lot of other podcast platforms that you can listen to in case you miss our live show. But before we go on with the show, as we always do when we start the show, we encourage our viewers to please participate. Yes, you can freely give your comments, suggestions, questions, shout outs, whatever you want to say on our Facebook page or YouTube. You will have the chance to win a prize depending on how many comments you make. So, for the mechanics of the game, let's watch this.
How to join the game. 1. Watch the live show and listen to the conversations. 2. Participate and share your experiences on the topic during the live show. 3. Type your thoughts or experience via comment section. 4. All participants are eligible to win a prize. 5. The more comments.
All right, we're back. So the more comments you have, the higher chances of you winning for our show tonight. And, oh my gosh, I know we missed the episode last week because, as you all know, Houston was struck by a hurricane. And unfortunately, we didn't have the chance or weren't able to go on live because we didn't have power and we didn't have internet. And there are a lot of families, millions of families have been affected by the storm. So we apologize to all our viewers for you miss or not being able to watch our show. I know I got some messages on my messenger that asking me, Mom, why are you not live tonight? So yes, we're back though. We're back on track. So we're here tonight. And I'm so excited to have a very, very special guest. You know, as our theme says for this season, lead with passion, right? So we have a great leader in the community who we're going to learn more about and we're going to chat with tonight. So it's going to be an exciting conversation. Of course, let me introduce him first. Mr. Wally Arias. Yes, he's a very, very prominent figure here in Houston, Texas. He has over 40 years of global experience in engineering, construction, consultancy, project management, and business development in oil and gas companies, petromedical and large power plants, transmission and distribution systems, and community utilities. Yes, he's a very technical guy. And he also currently serves as president and CEO of AR Recruiting Services and Arias Consulting Engineers, or ACE. And he retired from KBR in 2012, where he served as senior project manager and director of business development for over 12 years. Previously, he worked as country manager for an LNG producer, project manager for an oil and gas company, electric department manager, project engineer, and lead electrical engineer for engineering and construction companies, and manager of business development for an independent private producer. Wally's expertise encompassed in all phases of project management, business development, detailed engineering, supervising project teams, department oversight, system planning, conceptual and feasibility studies, procurement, quality assurance review, construction management, and contract negotiations and startups. For as far as his civic involvement, he is the founding chairman of PhilAm Council of South Texas, known as FACOST. And I think they just had a recent renaming and it's now known as FACT. Also the founding co-chairman of People Caring for the Community, which is the PCCI, and founding chairman of Philippine Kalayaan Houston. And he also was a president of the University of the Philippines Alumni Association, Houston, Texas. Also became a regional vice president of UP Alumni Association in America. And to 2021 to the present, he's the first vice president of Knights Grand Officer of Rizal, KOR Texas Area Foundation. Wow. Who else has this accolades, right? No other than our very special guest for tonight, Mr. Wally Arias. Let's get him in. Good evening, Paul.
Good evening, MJ. Thank you for...
You're welcome. Boy. It seems like our page was not enough for all the introductions I had to do for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. How are you, Point? How are you from, you know, how were you affected with the storm or by the storm?
Well, just like everyone else, we suffered the electricity brownout.
Mm-hmm.
2 days.
And wow.
So what we did the second day, we just stayed at the First Colony Mall. We stayed there for 8 hours, just pull up and use their Wi-Fi. But otherwise, Wednesday, the power came back and started the place. And, you know, of course, we have some friends that went to our house. We accommodate them while the power is still out. So everything now is back to normal.
Yes, I'm glad. Although I still hear a lot of other communities still don't have power. That's very unfortunate. And there's still a lot of, like, even traffic lights, they're all not working yet. We have some traffic lights here in even in Pearland that are not working. So you got to do the, you know, the manual thing, just stop and go. Anyway, as our theme is about leading with passion, we're going to go to specific questions regarding or with regards to your leadership experience and everything. Because before we get there, we want to get to know you first on a more personal level, like your background from the Philippines, because we would love for our viewers to know where you came from and everything. But before you answer that, Paul, before I ask my first question, let me just read some few comments from our readers. From Joanne Esterija, good evening, Texas, and Mom MJ. And also from Dennis Esterija, good morning, Mom MJ, from the Philippines. So we have some people watching from the Philippines. Good morning to both of you there. Thank you for tuning in again. But yeah, tell us a little bit about you, where you are from the Philippines, and about your family background, Pa.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Pateros, Rizal. It's now Pateros City. My father was a retired U.S. Army surgeon and band leader as well. And while my mother was actually a seamstress to begin with, but became a businesswoman when she purchased a movie theater in Baclaran. So that's where most of our time was spent. You know, during the weekend, we spent the whole weekend watching movies. Anyway, I grew up as one of 10 siblings, 6 brothers and 4 sisters. With 3 brothers joining the U.S. military, definitely due to the influence of my father.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so in other words, I grew up in Pateros, Rizal. In my elementary was there. And then in high school, I went to Don Bosco Technical Institute in Mandaluyong, Rizal. So that's how I became more, I would say, attached to the religion. Became... one of the sacristans, so to speak. Naturally, after my college, I became more or less a preacher in our community.
Wow. So I'm just curious, Paul, because you Don Bosco, that's close to our place. You know, my husband is from Mandaluyong City, JP Rizal Street. So it's like near Calentong, right? Don Bosco. I kind of know that place. But... Yeah, as you have said, your mom bought like a movie theater, and so you were watching movies like most of your childhood. I'm just curious, were you not influenced to become a movie star with that?
Well, my chore there. That's why I get to watch pre-movies, is to clean up after the show, and then I as part of the crew that cleans up the place.
So growing up, what interests or hobbies did you have? Like, how did you, you know, when we are young, people would ask us, what do you want to become when you grow up? So when you were growing up, what had you in mind? What were you dreaming of becoming when you grew up?
Well, I was at the beginning, of course, elementary, I was not too curious about what I'm going to be. After elementary graduation, my mom decided that I will still enroll me to Don Bosco. And, you know, it did me a good thing, because I became, I would say, a little religious at that time. And during my third year, I was really approached by my rector to see whether I would be interested to be a priest. Okay, which I said, which I really thought that could be my vocation. But my wife was more or less requested that I stay for the senior year, and after graduation, then I can freely do what I want to do. But then, of course, as the saying goes, I did not go through. So, and I became, in my high school days, I was enrolled in a vocational school, the Don Bosco Technical. And I got, interested to doing small stuff. In fact, I was enrolled in the electromechanics vocation, which allowed me to be able to actually assemble an electric fan, assemble some minor radio. I was able to fabricate a hammer, those kind of things that you learn. And I became more interested in something technical, because that's what led me to look at engineering, although that was not really my passion, because I was, while I was in my high school days, I was pretty active in the community also in my town. So I was leaning to be a lawyer. That's what was where I my passion was leading, because of my interest in politics at the time. But in fact, when I enrolled in UP, my first year, I was looking at courses leading to become a lawyer. But an uncle of mine, who was a chief mechanic of Caltech at the time, really challenged me to say, you know, what is needed by the country is, are engineers. I think you should be, you should pursue engineering. So in a nutshell, I end up pursuing engineering. And but my passion as a lawyer did not leave me, because I got still involved in too many community activities.
Well, that's good, Bo. I think we have a lot of comments, Pa. So I'm going to read from Attorney Orly Dizon. Wally Arias played a key role in my journey to becoming a Knight of Rizal. Yes, so that's from Attorney Orly. And then Dennis Estaria, hello po, Sir Wally Arias. Good evening po, and Ma'am MJ. And then another comment from Attorney Orly. Wally, with over 40 years of public service in various Filipino groups and organizations, how did you cope with the BS of Filipino culture and politics within Filipino orgs? You know what? Before you let's save that for later, Po. You're going to answer that, because I think we have to go on a short break before we move on. So we'll be back. Thank you.
Attention, food lovers. Get ready for a brand new culinary adventure with the Commissary Kitchen.
Join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Time or 9 a.m. in the Philippines for a live show that brings the best of the kitchen straight to your screen.
Presented by Lawn Live Stream and Podcast and produced by Lawn Media Network, we'll explore delicious recipes, share expert cooking tips, and bring you closer to the world of gourmet cuisine.
Don't miss our pilot episode on July 18th. Mark your calendars and tune in for a flavorful journey you won't want to miss.
The Commissary Kitchen, where every meal is an experience. See you there.
All right, we're back. So going back to the question of Attorney Orly. So what can you say with his question, po?
Well, in the beginning, it really pissed me off because of a lot of backbiting and like the Filipino crab mentality, that once somebody is starting to be acknowledged or growing in his profession, somebody will try to pull him down. Okay, mm-hmm. That became a real irritating characteristic that I hated among Filipinos. But as I mature a little bit, I learned that that's part of our culture. You just have to adapt. In other words, when I used to be very prone to anger because of some people, I in the past retaliate without thinking the consequence. But since you cannot do anything about that situation, and if you don't want to pull your hair because of frustration, you just have to see how you can adjust. And I think I became successful after maybe 10, 15 years in the community. And then I more or less, I learned how to adjust with the various traits or characteristics of the Pinoys.
Yeah, unfortunately, po, that's very true. Because some of these characteristics that we have are deeply ingrained. Because it's culture, it's a way of life of a lot of our kababayans, diba? And unfortunately, I think it's all because of our history too. We were ruled by different, colonizations from different countries. So we are a mixture of different cultures. And unfortunately, when you go through that kind of experience, you tend to adapt to the environment, right? And it's very true. It's kind of frustrating, but I think as we go through this experience, we tend to learn how to deal with them in a better way. And we have more questions, or I mean comments, from Edward DeSeco. Good morning, po, watching from Quezon City. Work in Pioneer Trucks Parts. Okay, good morning, Edward. Thank you for watching. And then Arceli Estariha, good morning, Texas. I'm watching from Pangasinan. Wow, we have a lot of viewers from Pangasinan. And we have a very long comment here from our very own attorney, Eileen. A huge shout out to Wally for his amazing dedication and selfless service to the Phil-Am community. Your hard work, kindness, and passion are contagious and truly inspiring. Plus, thank you for introducing me to community service. It's been such a rewarding experience. Huge shout out for Wally. Your dedication and selfless service to the Phil-Am community is truly inspiring. I think it's just a repeat. But yes. We need people like you who are bold and strong and courageous to step up there to make a difference in the community. So another comment, good evening, Texas and Mom, from John and Dennis. Good morning, Mom. Anyway, going back to your experience, so you became an engineer. Now, when did you come to the U.S., Po? When did you migrate to the United States?
I migrated in 1971.
Oh, okay. The day I was born. I mean, the year I was born. So you've been here for as long as I have lived.
Yeah, I graduated from UP in 1970. Uh-huh. And a year after, you know, I was able to leave and come to and migrated to Jacksonville, Florida. But there's a story by itself, okay?
Yeah. So how did you come to the U.S.? Was it because of your family? Was it a family petition, or was it for your job? Or how did you come to the U.S.?
Well, let me, it's a story, because in 1971, the habeas corpus was suspended in the Philippines. And coming from UP, of course, I had associates, schoolmates in UP that were radical. Because if you know that our history, the 60s were considered the student activism days, right? So, and of course, my close friends are from UP, and whether you are a radical or not, you are associated with them. So, after the habeas corpus, it was suspended in August 1971. Some of my friends, in fact, one of my closest friends, was picked up. Okay, and we did not hear from him, and we learned that he died. Oh. Okay. How he died, we don't know. Okay, and so but before that. You know, we were already hiding, so to speak, although we were not really radical per se, but guilty by association was the name of the, you know, situation. So, and unfortunately, my dad was a U.S. Army serviceman, and he has the privilege to be able to send his kids to the U.S., without undergoing the long immigration period. And when I said, Dad, can I go to the U.S.? And of course, at the time before that, I was, he was so surprised, because before that happened, we always argue, because I was more or less anti-American. He was an American. We always clash at the time. And then when I changed my mind and I said, Dad, can I go to the U.S.? What are you talking about? I thought you don't want America. So anyway, short story short, he sponsored me. So within a month, I was able to leave.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So your dad was serving the United States because he was in the military, and you were totally against. Yeah, I know. I understand that. We seem to. Yeah, but in the long run, you benefited from him being in the military. So during your first years in the United States, being in a country that you didn't really have the feel of, you know, being part of, how was it? How was your adjustment to the U.S. culture?
Well, you know, I think I'm one of the few fortunate people that never did experience what we call discrimination. Okay, I have, and of course, my boss was American and all whites, actually. And I was so fortunate, because there, 3 days after I arrived in the city, I was able to work. Okay, and I was hired by this huge American, and I became more or less his, call it adopted, you know, not really son, but very close to him. So because, and he was actually executive vice president of our company, and so having seen me being always with the EVP, the other employees, of course, my co-employees, did not dare actually bully me or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I was fortunate in that sense, by association with my boss, who was the executive VP. I was respected.
Wow.
And I was given actually opportunity by my boss faster than most of my peers. In fact, 10 years experience, guys, I was able to jump over them. because of the fact that my boss liked me.
So was there any kind of jealousy within the company?
Actually, no, I did not feel it because I was the only Filipino in that company, and that company was a small company. And that's if there is anybody listening here, it is it's not an exaggeration. You learn better from small companies to begin with, because you are given so much responsibilities that if you want to stay in the company, you try to make to really be good at it. So, and I spent during my first 5 years at least, my working hours start from 7 o'clock to about 12 o'clock midnight. So in fact, my salary, my first year and second year was twice my basic salary because of my because I work overtime all the time at the time. So that's why you know you have you know I think they like me because I really work hard.
Okay, well I think that's a Filipino trait that we can be proud of. We are hard workers. Yeah. We have more comments. Boy, if you don't mind, let me just read them from John Denver. He says, good evening po, Texas, and Sir MJ and Sir Wally from Philippines. I'm happy to be watching. Wow, and he's watching from Pangasinan. And then we have another comment, but before that, because we are going fast, we need another short break before we move on with our interview with our very special guest. So we'll be back shortly. All right, we're back. We're back. So we have another comment or question from Attorney Orly. Wally, as someone who experienced martial law firsthand and can share personal accounts of that period, what are your thoughts on the historical narrative of the Philippines during that time? Do you believe it has been accurately documented, or do you think there are revisions being made to the history?
Yeah, I think this is a subject that is actually I heard of, and coming having been in the Philippines very recently. In fact, I've been to the Philippines at least once every 2-3 years. You know, most of, especially nowadays, there is so-called revisionist approach now to history. What we experienced at the time, and not too much with me, because I left the Philippines in 1971. Okay, so martial law was 72. So I did all the stories that about martial law was from my friends. Okay, so I did not experience it physically there in the Philippines, but what during our college days and until I left, it, you know, that the situation was already starting to be, you know, tense, so to speak. And now that was the time that, you know, student activism became bolder. And, you know, until that habeas corpus suspension at Plaza Miranda, when there was a bombing in there in August 1971. Okay, so now, I was at the beginning of before martial law. So, but, you know, reading some of the articles, there is an attempt to change what is perceived to be the excesses of martial law. And of course, we cannot deny that our economy was good during that martial law period. You know, even before that, it was good, not necessarily as bad as, you know, a third world nation. But we learned, of course, later on that a lot of corruption happened and so forth. That led to the departure of the president at the time. So and I'm at I don't have firsthand experience of exactly what happened during that martial law period. And but I did participate. In 1982 when 72 when there was a martial law. We did participate in some rallies in Jacksonville, Florida, denouncing the martial law. Even in 1986 at the EDSA Power, we also demonstrated right here in Houston, at Tranquility Park. We were attuned to what's happening, but not necessarily present from my point.
Yeah, well, I guess let's go the other way. I mean, we don't want to get too politics is always not a good discussion because we all have different views. And of course, as you said, even though in history, if you didn't experience firsthand whatever is written by press or in books, you can't really tell which one is telling the truth. And a lot of times those are very opinionated, so not necessarily factual. But let's learn more about you. Let's forget about politics. We don't want to, you know, let's learn more about how, because we are going so fast with time. It's always like this because we just the time flies so fast when we're having these conversations. But at what point in your career as an engineer and as a passionate community servant, at what point in your career did you start to say that, yeah, it's time for me to get involved and to be a leader and to climb the leadership ladder?
Well, it started in Jacksonville, as mm-hmm. I said, in 1972, after the martial law that was declared. Being a newcomer in there and get to know a lot of the people, they knew that I came from UP. And so a lot of people were looking at me, okay, as to what's happening in that as a result of those student activism. And when martial law was declared, I was approached by some friends to see what we can do. And I led a rally in 1972. And as a result of that, my peers in Jacksonville was, compared to big cities, was a small, it's a big town, but not really involved in a lot of politics, right? So in others, it's not well known during the time. And, but most of the Filipinos there were doctors and nurses and all those, but not engineers or not other profession. And so they are not the activist type. So I was looked at as one that, since I was a newcomer and having been involved in some of those activities, they asked me to see whether we can form a group. So I founded a Filipino Civic and Cultural Association called FICA. Mm-hmm. And I became president, the first president of that group, which, happily to say, 50 years later, it still exists.
Wow, that's your legacy. You have left a legacy in Jacksonville, Florida. What a great accomplishment for you, Paul. Yeah.
In fact, I was reading Facebook of some of my friends there. They still remember this because 20 years later, up in 1993, okay, I was asked to be a speaker there and to talk about how we formed. Those were the days that I became very active. That group became because it started with professionals, and then we assimilated the rest of non-professionals, and it became a big group. Now there is a so-called like a similar to a FACOS here with three groups under one umbrella, led by that group that we started. Okay, mm-hmm. Basically.
Okay. All right. So anyway, we have more comments. I'm just going to read them. And after I read the comments, well, we're going to go for another break. So Attorney Eileen says, habeas corpus is a legal principle that safeguards individual freedom by making sure that an individual cannot be detained without being charged with a specific crime. During martial law in the Philippines under President Ferdinand Marcos, well, very specific, the government suspended habeas corpus. This meant they could detain people without charging them or giving them a trial. Yeah. Okay. And then have a wonderful morning, Texas, and more power. So I think that's just a comment, but it's true. I mean, as again, I said, we don't want to get so political here, but we can probably tell those who have lived long enough in the Philippines how life has been then and now. So Anyway, let's go for a break. And then we'll be back.
In a world filled with fleeting moments, there's beauty waiting to be captured. My name is Christian, and I specialize in immortalizing your most precious memories. From elegant weddings to vibrant events and timeless portraits, I'm here to make every moment unforgettable. Let me tell your story through the lens. Contact me today and let's create magic together.
All right, we're back again. So it's been a very interesting evening with our very own guest, Mr. Wally Arias. It seems like you have actually led to create these organizations in Florida and here in Houston. So now, fast forward, moving to Houston. When did you move to Houston, Bob? And what prompted you to move to Houston?
Okay. Yeah, I moved in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
In 1973, there was an oil crisis because as a result of the war in the Middle East. And there was, if you experience, if you hear about it, there were long lines of, no gas and all that. There was a, severe shortage. Mm-hmm. And Florida, being a tourist state, suffered tremendously because of the lack of tourism, because there was a recession in the U.S. But Texas was booming because mm-hmm. of the industry. Although I was not laid off, I said, okay, we cannot, because the future of Florida at the time was not good, okay? It was gonna suffer, a decade of because of that energy crisis, and therefore, you have to look ahead. So I decided to send an application to some companies here in Houston, Texas. Then received a positive reply. So I went to Houston in 1975, and immediately I got hired. So I said, this is the way it is. I'm blessed to come to Houston. Mm-hmm. Although it was a heavy heart, but I was just beginning my family. I had a son born in 1975, May 1975. And July 75, I went here to Houston. And in August 75, I'm here.
So, all right. Well, Houston is blessed to have you, Paul. So being, you know, because I know you started as, you're also a very religious guy. So do you believe that God has planted you to where you are now, that your life is actually just a manifestation of God's plans in your life? Because early on, you were religious, you were leading the church, and you even thought that you would be a preacher. So all your experiences, you think, have led you to, I mean, God has manifested his plans in your life. And
yes,
what do you think about that?
I proudly pronounce that, yes, my life was always blessed. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not because I am so religious, but, you know, I just am a normal person, but, you know, attend to my religious beliefs. Okay. Mm-hmm. And although there were periods in my life where I veered away, and of course, after suffering, and I have a lot of, call it, mysteries in my life that, you know, that I could share with you if you have time, but that is too many blessings that I experienced in my life that it could not have happened without him. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Just like 2 nights ago when was that? Last night or 2 nights ago when Trump was almost got killed.
Oh my gosh,
yes. By just an inch. So he was blessed because of that. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I won the Chamber of Commerce car. Courtesy of Eileen, by the way, because he was the one who sold me the raffle
ticket. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. All of a sudden, I won, and I was just sleeping when somebody called me that I won that car. I always attribute all this. Anything that you have no part, and all of a sudden it happened to you, you have to attribute to him. That's, you know, I strongly believe that, and I have so many miracles in my life. Mm-hmm. That. I could not live a life without him.
So wow. Yeah, all glory to him. Anyway, Paul, we have more comments from Rochelle DeSeco. Good evening, watching from Pangasinan. And then Attorney Eileen says, I sold you the ticket, and it was the first ticket to be sold. Yes, and Dr. Carly D, you look great, MJ, informative show. Thank you so much, Dr. Carly D, for watching. Now let's go back to leadership, because our topic is all about leadership or leading with passion. So what do you think, Paul, are the most important, what are the top three top three characteristics of a good leader or a great leader for you, Paul?
Well, he must have integrity. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the first and foremost. You know, he must always demonstrate that, and it should be the cornerstone in leadership. Okay, a good leader must possess unwavering integrity to inspire confidence. Okay, mm-hmm. and maintain credibility, and that's one of the top ones. And of course, I say he must also be like a visionary, okay, where he provides direction and purpose for the team.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another one. He must also be innovative. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's vital, especially for competitiveness, right? And so he must encourage innovation and valuing new ideas. Okay, so he must also be communicative, okay, mm-hmm. or be able to articulate your vision and provide guidance. So those are things. And he must be empathetic also.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So in other words, empathy is the ability to understand and connect with others emotionally. If they are, you know, suffering from something, you should be able to empathize that, or not just sympathize, but be empathetic that about their feeling. So, yeah. Of course, you must also be bold and courageous. Okay, uh-huh. And it requires leadership. Requires tough decisions and facing challenges. So mm-hmm. you must have the courage to face them. So mm-hmm. You must be respectful. Mm-hmm. Respectful of others, respectful of their opinions. You cannot just be one-sided, okay? Or be a tunnel vision person, okay? You mm-hmm. must welcome various ideas that everybody has their point of view, okay? Mm-hmm. Maybe lousy point of view, but at least hear them, respect, okay? So mm-hmm. those are things that I think a leader should possess. And yes. Mm-hmm. Basically, and foremost is be inspiring.
That's right.
Because you know, you will have a successful company if you inspire others to do their best because they see in you, okay, mm-hmm. a good model.
Yes. So now going back to your community service, so you founded FACT, used to be FACT, which is now FACT or FACT.
Philippine right. well, American Council of Texas.
Yeah. Yes. So what challenges, Paul, did you encounter when you were trying to create this in Houston?
Yeah.
If you could just, yeah.
Okay. When that happened, the Filipino community has a history of organizations trying to group together. But, you know, because of the basic nature of our being Filipinos, each one backbiting each other. So there was no unity, mm-hmm. right, in our community, among organizations. But then in 1993, the government of the Philippines, when Fidel Ramos got elected, actually, in November 1992, he declared that we have a Philippine consulate during that time. That was started in 1979. And then in 1992, Ramos declared that it shall be closed. Okay. And so, you know, then all of a sudden we were shocked. The Filipinos in Houston were shocked that it will be closed. And so, having been a president of UP Alumni Association in 1988-1990, I was more or less fresh in the community, and I have known a lot of these the leaders of the other organizations that started way back. Like I told you, there was an attempt of having a council called Council of Filipino American Organization, CIPAW, okay, that ended up with some organizations suing each other.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So in other words, whatever attempt that they tried to during that time, you know, ended up with the way Filipinos are, fighting each other. So anyway, in 1993, when declaration to close the consulate happened, you know, I decided to talk with leaders and see what we can do to save the consulate. Mm-hmm. So we went to the consulate at the time. It's not closed at the time. I think the consul general was Mariano. Okay, and so we went there and told them that, you know, this is not right. We don't, you know, we have to have this. We cannot close this. And so at the time, the consul general encouraged us to write a letter to the government, to the new incoming government, because he was supposed to be leaving also as a result of the change of administration. So he said, why don't you write the government? So what I did, and the other leaders, not just I, of course, we decided to have a so-called it's a movement to save the Philippine consulate.
So we wrote
a nice letter, but to and signed by 3,000 Filipinos. So then it was passed to the Malacañang and by the consulate, and then all of a sudden Ramos said that he got it. He got the booklet that we sent with 3,000 signature, and decided that he will include Houston to his trip, because he was as a newly elected president. He was supposed to speak at the United Nations that coming October or November in 1993. But he said that okay, after I have gone there through the United Nations, I will pass by Houston. And he wants to talk with us, okay, to explain why. Because we were the only city that did that, okay? So he decided that he will come here. That's Fidel Ramos. So in all of a sudden, when we were shocked that he's going to come, he said, we have to have a united group to represent the community. We cannot speak everybody speaking on its own. So all of a sudden agreed, let's form some kind of a council or federation.
So that's again, how FAC Coast was born.
Yes, in May 1, 1993, we were able to convene everybody. We developed a constitution. We formed the Filipino American Council of South Texas. And I was elected chairman.
Okay, wow, that's awesome. So, Paul, we have more comments. Mark Carlo DeSeco, hi, MJ, good evening, watching from Pangasinan. God bless your show. And then we have another comment from Attorney Orly. But before we get there, I'm just curious, Paul, comparing the time when you founded FACOST up to now, how would you describe, was there any change in the culture, or was your mission or was the vision of FACOST actually did it materialize all through the years?
Well, of course, the council is still existing through the Philippine American Council. So from 1993 to now, it's about 31 years. So that's how long FACOST from its start to present. In other words, it's the same. It's just a change of name, because we did 15 years after my chairmanship, we did not pay tax. So the 501c3 was revoked. Okay, so it got reinstated, but they decided to change the name so they don't have to pay the arrears in taxes, which actually should not have happened, but they did it anyway. Anyway, I am proud to say that during the first 10 to 15 years of the council, everybody, I think, were all supportive. Okay, I mean that the council was organizing all this Philippine Independence Day, Christmas party. It's community wide. So in other words, but nowadays it looks like there's some kind of lukewarm attitude to participating. But the mission is still the same. It just depends on the leadership. Actually, some leaders are more active, some leaders are less active. So there's a there's a crescendo. Sometimes it's very active, and then all of a sudden there's a lying low in activities. So, but the mission is still the same, and I wish that the PACOS or PAC can retain their the initial mission and activities, And unfortunately, because of now we have about 50 organizations or 45 active organizations, okay, each one is doing their own thing, and there's the concept, the council is more or less, not as visible as before.
Yeah. So I think that's where the challenge is. As you have said, being, you know, the Philippines being a very regionalistic country because of, you know, and we have different views and everybody seems to have their own ways of leading. And it's like, I think one of the characteristics that I hope that will change, you know, it might take decades or centuries to change the culture, but I think our unity, we have to be united. We are too divided because everybody wants to be a leader. But of course, we learned through the years that it's because of the leadership of great people in the community that this are actually, you took the courage and the boldness to create this one. And even though the mission may have not been fully achieved, but still you achieved something. You brought the Filipino community to a different level. So anyway, we have more comments. I wish we have more time, Paul, because it seems like we have a lot of things that we can talk to you about, but unfortunately we are coming to an end of the show. But I'm gonna just read some of the questions or the comments. I know it's a question from Attorney Orly. I don't know if you have time to answer it, but last question for Wally, what are your thoughts on people's pronouns, personal identification, and gender affirmation? In other words, what are your thoughts on the overreach of personal freedoms in today's society? So just briefly, Po, answer that question, and then I'll read the rest of the comment.
Well, I think the society is veering towards a new arena where personal freedoms is more or less being curtailed to a certain degree without calling it, without actual saying, okay, you cannot do this. But the fact that the agencies themselves are imposing certain rules that impose on the ability of the people to either speak or be more creative is being curtailed. So, we are approaching a dark period where I'm afraid we may not recognize ourselves, okay? Mm-hmm. We may be a different society. And, I hope not. I hope this election may be the turning point.
Yes.
The inflection point of our society that what we were fearing may not happen.
Yes. I think we need a total makeover. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, another question and overall, yeah. Comment from Geraldine Garcia. Good evening, watching from Villasis, Pangasinan. And of course, Attorney Eileen Ligot. Thank you, or Ligot Dizon. Thank you, Wally, for encouraging me to be involved in many film organizations. It's been such a rewarding experience and has really helped me connect with some awesome people. I appreciate your encouragement more than you know. And I think just for our viewers, we have to have the courage and the boldness to just be us, just be you. I know the society is influencing us and it's just making us go against our own inner values and our character. But as long as we have the guidance of whoever spiritual guidance you have or whatever faith you have and whatever character you have built or all through the years, as long as you just be yourself, be courageous and be bold to just be you, then you can make an impact. You know, we don't have to conform with society, right? We don't have to conform with society to make a difference in this world. And we all have a mission. We all have greatness in us. We all have leadership abilities. It's you if you take charge of your life and lead your life. I think that's where we start. If we lead our lives the right way, we can lead others in the right path as well, right? So anyway, we're going to do the last words, Paul, for our viewers. What are your last words or inspiration that you can give our viewers, having been a leader in your family, in your in your career and in the community, what thoughts or words you can tell our viewers tonight?
Well, you know, just looking at my experience, I would say the word of advice is for especially the youth, okay? As you said, be bold. Do not be shy in expressing your opinion, your voice. And if you are in a company, try to be try to be innovative. Try to be courageous and show your mentors or your superiors your ideas and how you can be better, how you can improve the situation. So in other words, don't be shy, be participative, and be communicative, and express your opinion. And never you disagree, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay to disagree. Yeah, right. Yeah, so be heard. I mean, be heard. That's the important thing, especially if you have good ideas. Be heard. Anyway, let's do the raffle. And then we're going to wrap up after we find out who our winner is. Whoa! Congratulations, Attorney Orly.
We have a magnet somewhere there.
I know, right? Anyway, congratulations. Oh, well, Attorney Eileen Ligot says re-raffle. Let's do it again. I guess we're going to give away the prize of Attorney Orly. Yeah, he doesn't need the prize. Somebody else probably would deserve it or just need it.
John Denver. Oh.
Okay, Mark Carlo De Seco. Okay, so Attorney Orly said he donated his prize. So Mark Carlo, congratulations. And to all our viewers tonight, and to you po, Kuya Wally, thank you very much for spending time with us. We truly appreciate your sharing your story, your insights about leadership, and just being bold on appearing here at our show, Be Bold, Why Not? So again, next week, Monday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here at Lawin Media Network. You will see me again, MJ here. Good night, everyone. God bless. Be bold. Go get your follow your dream and your passion, and just live boldly. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.